from Jeffersonville, Indiana. No, I beg your pardon. See, I'm sicker than I thought. Mary. I've got Louise's name written down here for something else. Mary Kay from Jeffersonville, Indiana. That's one good thing about Al-Anon. When you make a mistake, you don't have to feel guilty. It's just proof I'm human. I didn't have any idea who Mary was before this weekend. And she's become very dear to me, but this is how Al-Anon works. No matter where I go, I can see a room full of strange faces, but I feel right at home. They're just friends I haven't met yet. And that's what this conference has been for me. I knew just a few of you before this weekend, but I've met oh so many more since. And I really am looking forward to coming back again next year. Now, you didn't come to hear me speak, so I'll let Mary take up. Yep, Mary take over.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Mary Kelly, and I'm a member of the Jeffersonville Al-Anon group in Jeffersonville, Indiana, which is right across the river from Louisville, Kentucky. Would you all join me in a moment of prayer to ask God that I be an instrument of His will, His love, and His peace? Thank you. I'm here today because I'm supposed to be here. And that's what happens to you when you give your life to God. He puts you where He wants you. And you might have a lot of argument with it. And you might tell Him that I'm not going to do it, I can't do it. But you will do it. Because I kept saying, I'm not going. And He says, yes, I know. But get your bags packed. And I put off thinking about it. I had a final exam Thursday. And I never thought that I could consider a comprehensive final as a blessing. But I found it was a blessing because I was so involved in that I didn't have time to think about this and argue with God some more. I got the final over with. In a little bit, I'll have taken care of this. I've learned in this program that you can only live one day at a time. That you only want to live really one day at a time. Because in living tomorrow or yesterday, you put so much emphasis on those days that you don't really see, you breeze through today. And you miss it. With Sean, I wanted so many things for him. I was thinking about what was going to happen to him when all of this conning and conniving was going on. I was scared. The program taught me not to worry about what Sean was going to do that would embarrass me or reflect on me quite some time ago. And so my concern was really for him. But for a while, I had to get honest with myself and realize that I was thinking of what he did reflected on me. Because I feel like I've been a major influence in his life. I've made a lot of mistakes along the way. And if he didn't turn out well, everybody would know about all of those mistakes. But you know, I have always been a very negative thinker. I never thought that I've done a lot of good things, too. I've given him a lot of good things. He used to hate me. He didn't mention this in his talk, that every time we get a chance, he'd give me an opening, like 2 seconds of quiet, and I'd jump right in. And I'd start telling him all of this great and wonderful stuff. And he thought I had all of the answers. And he thought I was all wise and all knowing. Oh, it's wonderful. And then when he came to Alateen, he knew where I got it. And he found out that I really wasn't so smart after all. That I was just telling him what you had told me. And he didn't like it too well. Every time I'd open my mouth, he'd say, "Yeah, there's Miss Al-Anon. She knows it all. She's going to tell me, too." And I did. But I'm so glad that I've had this program to share with my children. I'm so glad that I have this program to share with my friends. I'm so friends both in and out of the program. I had a neighbor. Oh, thank you. Thank you. I had a neighbor that lived next door to me one time. And there's always cars in front of the house in the driveway. And she was a good Christian lady and active in her church and so forth. But she said, "I don't understand it. I think I have a lot of friends, but I don't have nearly as many as you because there's always cars parked out in front of your house." And I laughed and I said, "Oh, well, they're all just a bunch of drunks." And later she came to find out what Al-Anon was. And when she found out what it was, she wanted to join. But her husband didn't have a drinking problem. She had a thinking problem, but no drinking problem. And so she was looking for what we have in this program through her church. And to a degree, she finds it. But not in the quality that I think we find it in this program. I have been so blessed in this program. When I came to this program, I was like everybody else. Only I had more reason to think that there was nothing wrong with me. Because when I met my husband, Terry, he was already in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when we married, he had been sober 3 years. When we dated, once alcoholism was mentioned. He never told me about AA. He had a grapevine on his dash, and it had the Serenity Prayer on the cover. And I thought, "Gee, that's a neat prayer." And he said, "Yes, it is. It's what I live by." He said, "I'm an alcoholic." And I couldn't believe that because he was too beautiful of a person to be an alcoholic. That wasn't my idea of an alcoholic. And I said, "You mean you were an alcoholic?" And he said, "No, I am an alcoholic, and I'll always be an alcoholic. That I'm only one drink away from being a drunk." And this was just about all that was said. He never asked me to go to a meeting with him. We just had other things to talk about. Mainly me. Because that was my favorite subject, me. And he liked me. He loved me, and I loved him because he loved me. Because I had never met anyone that I felt so comfortable with. He had a peace, a serenity, a joy, an understanding of himself and other people that I had never known before. And I thought it was wonderful. But mainly I was interested in me. We married. And Terry was in AA. He was going to about one meeting a week. And this didn't interfere with my life because I thought, you know, give him one night out a week. That was all right. It wasn't give him one night out a week, but if he wanted to take one night out a week away from me, that was all right. You know, I could manage that. So it was no big problem to me. We were married about 3 years, and anything Terry said to me, asked me, it was fantastic. It was marvelous. Anything he wanted to do, I was right for it. His cousin, my husband is from Omaha, Nebraska, and he has a cousin in Omaha that is just about 2 weeks younger than him that he drank with and was in jail with and in trouble with and trying to get out of trouble with. He was always in trouble. His cousin, Philip, also had a drinking problem. And he was in a very bad state. The psychiatrist had called his family in and told them that there was no hope for this young man. And he was 27 years old. No, 30 years old, that he had no conscience and that he would die drunk. He was a hopeless case. And Terry got the idea that maybe if Philip came to Indiana and lived with us and went to AA, he had been exposed to AA in Omaha, that it would work for him. And I said, oh, yeah, okay, that's wonderful. I think if Terry had told me that King Kong was going to come and spend a couple of weeks, I would have just started looking for a big bed for him, because anything he said was fine. And I'm so glad for that. Our lives change. And sometimes we get so hung up on wanting to go back to the way it used to be that we can't live in the present. But now I know I'm not sorry anymore that I can't go back to the past. I'm grateful that I have that past to look back on. That beautiful, innocent love with no strings attached. Just, I love you. And you love me. So in the meantime, Terry had suggested he had gotten back into AA and become active in AA, going to several meetings a week and doing 12-step work. And he suggested to me that I go to Al-Anon to find out a little bit about alcoholism, since we were going to have an active alcoholic living in our home. And I thought that was fine. And I went in and told him what my name was and said, I really don't know exactly why I'm here, what I'm going to get from this. And they said, that's all right, honey. Just sit down and be with us. We love you. And they told me this the first night I walked in. And I really kind of thought they were a bunch of phonies. I didn't know what they wanted, but they were probably phonies. I was suspicious. I know now I had reason to be suspicious, because I was always suspicious. The things that I did, I saw people, other people, as I saw myself. But I didn't know that then. I do now. So Philip came to live with us. He arrived on a Saturday afternoon. His folks had picked him up at an institution, put him in the car, drove straight through, and got here, got out of the car, took the bags upstairs, and Philip came down in about an hour, and he was bombed out of his gourd. And I couldn't figure out how, because he hadn't been to the drugstore. He hadn't been to the liquor store. He hadn't even been out of the house. And I couldn't figure out how he was bombed already, when they just picked him up, went to the ward and picked him up. I was naive. His folks left the next morning, and that began kind of a merry-go-round for me, because I didn't understand about alcoholism. I didn't understand the lying when there was no reason to really lie. I didn't understand the stealing. He would steal money from my wallet. I'd have my purse on the kitchen table getting ready to leave, and I'd go someplace and get ready to pull some money out, and there wasn't any money, or there wasn't any wallet. Thanks to the good old post office, I got my wallet back every time. They knew where we lived. They just call and say, "Mrs. Kelly, we have your wallet again." He'd drop it in a mailbox. He wasn't mean. He wasn't trying to hurt. But I didn't understand this. But it really got to me when we'd have guests over for dinner and he'd swipe their wallets. This was embarrassing. I didn't understand the bad checks and people wanting us to pick them up. I didn't understand when he staggered home, and it always rained, and there was always potholes full of water, and he fell in one, and he'd get up, and he'd fall in the next one, and then he'd come into my house. I didn't understand this. And he had a pet phrase. No matter what time of the day or the night, he'd say, "Good morning," when he came in, and that just tore me up. It'd be 4:35 o'clock in the evening, and that just tear me up. I think, "You stupid fool, you don't even know if it's day or night." Terry got him a job, and he got the job back for him, and he got the job back for him, and he got him out of jail. And I didn't understand these things. I was going to Al-Anon at the time. Every Monday night, I would go in and sit down around the table, and I'd proceed to tell them everything that he had done the whole week. And most of these things were done to me. He was tearing up my home. He was disrupting our life. And I didn't want like it one damn bit. Now, I got smart in this program real fast. I I learned the slogans and the jargon, the ins and the outs, and I could talk this program real well, and I could tell you how to use it. And I wanted this disruptive force out of our life. But being the sweet little thing that I was, I couldn't tell my husband, get this bum out of here. So I began to finagle away. One night, I heard him at the meeting say, you're not helping the alcoholic by accepting the consequences of his actions. He has to accept the consequences of his actions. And I thought, aha, there's my answer. And I got busy on it. And I started telling Terry, now you know, we're hurting Philip more than we're helping him. We're really killing him with kindness, letting him stay here, getting him out of trouble, out of jail, jobs back, all of these things. We're killing him with kindness. He's not being made to accept the responsibility of his actions, and until he does, he will not get sober. I'd learned this program. And Terry thought about it. Yeah, that was probably right. Well, I thought about it for a while longer, and I kept this up in just very subtle little ways. And finally, Terry arrived at the decision that Philip should leave. Now, I'm not sure how I maneuvered it around that it was his decision that Terry leave. But somehow or another, I did. This hit me last night when I was thinking. I think the reason I knew that Sean was such a con, because he's got an old con for a mother. And this had never occurred to me before, just how much of a con I was. So we told him he had to leave, and Terry and I were sitting at the table, and he said, don't you think we could give him one more chance? And I said, no, if we love him, we'll let go of him now. I played the part to the hilt. Philip came downstairs and he looked at Terry and he said, won't you give me just one more chance? And Terry just melted. And he looked at me and I went. And he looked back at Philip and he said, nope, sorry, we can't give you one more chance. He had found an apartment for Philip and paid a month's rent on it and moved a few things for him. And he went out the door and slammed the door mad as hell. And I thought, well, that's a normal reaction. Yeah, that's all right. Then things got tough. Because about 2 days later, Terry went down to the apartment to check on Philip, make sure he was all right. And he had never arrived at the apartment. And nobody knew where he was. No one had seen him. And then, you know what happened. The guilt, the remorse set in. My God, he's dead someplace. And it's my fault. If I hadn't thrown him out, this wouldn't have happened. Oh, God, the ego that we have. 3 weeks, we still hadn't heard from him. We called all the police, sheriff, the hospitals in New Albany, Jeff, Louisville. No one had heard from him, of him. And finally, one day my husband was reading the paper, and he came across a name in the court section that looks something like the name. His name was Thibodeau. Can you believe a Kelly and a Thibodeau would be related? But it was something like it. And he called the Louisville police And they said, no, we don't have anyone by that name. And Terry asked about the other name. And he said, well, and described him. And he said, well, yeah, that could be him. So he went over, and sure enough, he had been sitting in the Jefferson County Jail since he left our house. The day he left, he stole a car and got picked up the same day. And he darn well wasn't going to let us know where he was. After all, we didn't love him and we didn't appreciate him, so he wasn't going to let us know. I deserved that. Terry didn't. But then I was so glad because I didn't have to explain to his mother and dad why we had thrown him out, and he died someplace in an alley, because he was bad. He could do nothing but drink day and night. He was sick. It ended up he got sent to the reformatory. And after 22 months, he was released. They had AA in the reformatory. And Terry had been, he had gone to the reformatory a few times for the AA meetings, chair them. But when Philip was there, he started going at least once a month. And Philip never knew when he was going to show up at the meeting, so he had to go to every one of those damn meetings if he wanted to see his cousin. And after about 6 months, Terry came home one night, and he told me, he said, you know, I think something's happening to Philip. He said, tonight he had clean clothes on, and he was shaving. And he had never done that. He would come into the meeting filthy, dirty, with a beard, looking awful. And he said, I think something's happening to him. And sure enough, something was happening to him. He found AA there. And he's been sober ever since. And it's beautiful. But it was not through me. But I continued to go to Al-Anon. And I'm still a good talker. And I guess I've been in Al-Anon about 3 years. I occupied a seat. The only reason I went was because you loved me. And you accepted me. And in those first couple of years, I was a yes butter and a what if. And I like to drove my sponsor crazy. She said, finally pounded on the table and said, when you quit saying yes but, you'll get something out of this program. And it hurt my feelings. She didn't understand me. I'll show her. I'll just dismiss her as a sponsor. I didn't tell her, but I did. But she didn't let go of me. Because everything that came up, she'd say, Mary will do it. Mary will do it. And I knew I couldn't do it. But she said, Mary will do it. And boy, I had to keep up that image. So I did it. There's a lot of things that we can do that we don't think we can do when we say we're going to do it. But about 3 years after I got into the program and occupying a seat, my father had a heart attack. And I hated this man with a passion. I did anything I could to get even with him because I loved him. I wanted him to love me, and he didn't. He didn't give a damn about me, and so my attitude was, if you don't give a damn about me, I don't give a damn about you. My father never said very much to me, but he wouldn't come to my house without my mother to kind of be the buffer, because after so long, she'd say, Mary Ellen, that is enough. And I'd back off because I knew that was enough. But he never ever retaliated. He just took it. But I blamed him for not being the father I wanted him to be, for not being the father that everybody else had. I blamed him. I know now today that he was incapable of being the person I wanted him to be, because he drank and he gambled. But I think his biggest problem was just a living problem, not a drinking problem, thinking problem. He was a very sick individual. He couldn't communicate with anyone. He was totally walled off from everyone. And that's what I blamed him for. We get so hung up on how we feel, so self-centered and so egotistical, that you can't see the forest for the trees. But he had this heart attack, and it was in the middle of the night. And my husband, we had three small babies, and he said, "You go on to the hospital, and I'll stay home here." And I thought it was my duty to go to the hospital. I was going to be with my mother, not with him, because I knew she was shaken. And on the way out there, it was raining, and I began to bawl, and I didn't know why I was bawling. And I thought, "You stupid fool, why are you crying? He's never done anything for you." And then I knew that all of those years, I loved him, and I hurt so badly because I wanted him to return that love, and he couldn't. But it all hit me. And I had heard in the program that you don't bargain with God. So I bargained with God. And I said, "God, if you'll get him over this, I'll make amends to him. I'll let him know that I love him and accept him as he is." He made it over it. And I kept my end of the bargain. I thought I was being very magnanimous in keeping my end of the bargain. But you know, it's what I had wanted for years. I wasn't being magnanimous. It was what I had wanted for years. And I thought I had really worked so hard to change my attitude. When you really want something so badly, and you had begun to work on me and let me know about love, it wasn't so hard to change my attitude. Because I'd wanted to love him all the time. You just let me take the stumbling block out of the way to keep us apart. We never ever talked. He came to my house about a month after he was out of the hospital in the middle of the day by himself. I knew something was different because he had never done that before. And he came in and we exchanged a few little amenities. And he went out in the backyard and he played with the children for a little bit. And this was another thing. If he was around and the children, if they'd run up his leg with a tricycle and he'd smack them on the bottom, I was right there ready to fight him. Because I thought, "Damn you, you never disciplined me out of love. You'll not touch one of my children." And that had gone. You took the stumbling block out of the way and let me love. The words were never spoken in making amends, but he knew and I knew that I loved him. And then the fringe benefits of the program happened to me because I knew he loved me. And that he was in that same walled-off room, same type of walled-off room that I was. He just didn't know how to let anybody know he loved them. He had no way to communicate with them. And I could love him free and clear, regardless of what he did to my mother. And I hated him for that because I saw her as a saint and she shouldn't have to live that kind of life. the humiliation, the degradation, the frustration. And all the years growing up, I thought she stayed because she told me when I was about 10, when you kids leave, I'm leaving. But you'll have a home. You're going to have a place to stay because I'm staying here and we'll have this home. But when you're gone, I'm getting out. And I felt so terribly guilty that she had to live in that situation because of me. Egotistical, self-centered. I had a brother that was 3 years older than me, but I took all the responsibility on myself. That's why she had to undergo this humiliation, because of me. All my life, I took on all of these negative roles. And so it's easy to see why now that I was so negative. But I always played a good part, and everyone thought I was sweet and wonderful and loving and good and kind. Oh, my, my, I was wonderful. I had them all conned, Sean. And I even had myself conned into believing these things. Before I got married, I thought I was nothing. This man loved me, and he made me think that there was good on about me. But I knew deep down that I wasn't good. The good was that pretty frosting on top that he saw and I could put on every day. But deep down, I knew that I wasn't any good. And this gnawed at me. But I couldn't let anybody know. So Terry became very, very active in AA. And boy, this just blew my little world. Because he promised me that he was going to take care of me and make me happy. He promised me that. Dummy me, I believed it. I wanted to believe it. And he got so busy in AA, he didn't have time for me. And he didn't have time for a lot of things. All these drunks came first. And I resented it. And boy, I made the mistake of going to the meeting one day and telling them I resented it. Wow. I didn't make that mistake again. I went underground. I said, yes, I accept him. Let go and let God. Let him live his, I let him live his life and I live mine. That was a crock. I let go of him in a way, but I let go of him with bitterness and resentment and anger and frustration. Now, you told me in the program, when you let go of them, you have to let go with love. I had gotten the first part of it, but I hadn't gotten the second part of it with love. So I was still playing a little game. And I was so angry and resentful. And it was during the summer. And he would go to the meeting, and I had three babies expecting another baby. We had 5 children in 8 and a half years, so I had plenty to do. He came home it was so hot that night. And I'd get the ironing board out while he was gone and get that old iron all stoked up. And I'd just iron and iron, and the perspiration would just pour off of me. And I'd feel so sorry for myself because here I was with these babies and a husband that never helped me. He never stayed home. He liked them better than he did me. Poor, poor me. And I'd cry in the sweat. And then he'd come home from the meeting, and he'd be whistling, and he'd be happy, and he'd be on top of the world, and I'd think, oh, God, I hate you. You so-and-so, you are so happy. You have no right to be so happy because I'm so miserable. And so I'd fix it. I couldn't get happy with him, but I could sure bring him down to my level. So he'd come in, and I'd say something that I knew was going to push his button or pull his string. And he'd react, and I'd say something back, you know, and it'd go back and forth for a little bit. And then I'd stop right in the middle of it, and I'd say, I'm sorry. It's my fault that we're having this fight. I'm sorry. And he'd say, no, it's my fault. I'm sorry. We'd go back and forth, and about the third time around, he'd say, I'm sorry. I'd drop it, let him be sorry. And I was on top of the game again, because then he was feeling badly for what he was doing to me. And this went on and on and on. Every night, same little old game. I don't think he's much smarter than I did, because he didn't catch on either what was going on. Finally, one night he came home, and I pulled this bit of, you like them better than me. You love them. You don't care anything about me. And he says, you're goddamn right I do. And it crushed me. Here, this dutiful wife with these three babies carrying another baby. My house was immaculate. My children were immaculate. They did only what they were supposed to do at the right time and in the right place and the right way. I managed everything. I managed the money. I did everything. And then he'd tell me, you're goddamn right. Who would want to come home to something like you? I went down the basement and I thought about killing myself. But I couldn't, because I was carrying this baby. And I couldn't take a life of an unborn child. Oh, I conned myself. God, I conned myself. And so I called one of the Al-Anon gals, and I think I thought I was going to get sympathy. Well, I called the wrong one. Because she said, are you happy when you go with him to a meeting? And I said, yeah. She said, then why don't you get off your dead butt and do something? Why don't you get active in the program and get off of his back? Well, I was hurting. I was hurting. So I tried it. I became active in the program. Every time somebody said, we need, my hand went up, and I did it. Whether it was cleaning up after the meeting, whether it was chairing the meeting, whether it was getting a dinner ready for the meeting, our group, going to the women's prison, getting a group together, IGR, State Assembly representative, whatever it was, I did it. And I got so busy and so active in the program that our house just about burst. Oh, then we had hell to pay, because he had wanted me in the program, and now I was active in the program, and he didn't like it because I wasn't there when he wanted me to be there. And I just have flat out tell him, honey, I've got to go to information service. I'm responsible for that. Now, if you've got to go someplace on Tuesday night, you'll have to get a babysitter. Because I was already committed to it. And it got so that I thought, now I'll be nice and I'll compromise. I told him, I said, I'll babysit on Friday night for you, and you babysit for me on Tuesday night. Because we couldn't afford babysitters at this time. Well, we still can't. Thank God we don't need them. But I became active and I became involved. But I was playing a part. I was learning about the program, and this was tearing me up. When I talked, I was as honest as I could be at the time. You see, I didn't know that I was doing all of this conning, game playing. And anybody that might suggest it, I just kind of stayed away from them. Because there were enough people around this program that loved me and built my ego that I didn't need that person. And then I began to feel used in Al-Anon and abused. And I began to withdraw. And our children were big enough that you couldn't put them to bed at 7:30 anymore, although Sean says I put him to bed at 7:30 till he was 13. I didn't really. But we had 5 children, and I had to do some slowing down. Things were getting out of hand, and I had to do some slowing down. When I started slowing down, then my thinking started picking up, and I started resenting anger, bitterness, jealousy. All came back. As long as I was busy, I didn't have too much time to think about it, because I was doing something. I can see where they say idle hands are the devil's workshop, because it sure is. And I looked at our marriage, and I thought about the way it used to be and the way it was then, and I was scared. I was frightened. You see, my folks had lived together, just 2 people in a house existed together with no relationship. They just lived together. They ate at the same table, and that was it. They shared nothing. My mother had so much bitterness and resentfulness toward him. By this time, she just totally ignored him. You go your way and I go my way. To hell with you.
Coming this way. And it scared the hell out of me, because I promised myself when I got married, my marriage would never be like that, because Terry and I are not like that. We have too much going for us. It would never be that way. And it was becoming that way. It was getting there very quickly. Now, he didn't think so, because he was still happened involved in the program, immersed in the program, almost to the point of obsession. I can't say that all of this is my fault. He had some part in it too. He didn't plan it, but it's the way it happened. And the more I thought about this, the more I saw, and the more depressed I became. And I couldn't stand it. It just killed me. We had no communication whatsoever. We'd talk about the kid. One kid had to go here, or one kid had to go there, and made sure they got there. But there was no love, caring, sharing on the close, intimate basis that we had had, and I thought we would always have. It was gone. We were living together. You see, I thought I loved Terry when I married him. But I loved him because he loved me. I didn't know what love was. He was my security that I could hide behind. He was what was going to take care of me forever and ever and ever. And I was losing my security. And I try to look at myself, and I didn't know who myself was, because I had never ever found out who myself was, because all of my life I was so full of guilt and fear that I never knew. And I got into
a very bad state of depression to where I didn't know what was going on around me. I go to the store and I come out and I get in the car and I was just totally engulfed by fear. Just total fear. I was scared to death to start that car. I didn't know why, but I was just scared stiff. I would just sit there rigid. I couldn't even get out of the car to get somebody to come and get me. I couldn't move. And finally, I'd talk to myself and I'd get myself home. Someone would call me in the afternoon and say, "What did you do today?" I didn't know. I'd say, "What day is it?" And they'd tell me what day it was. And I work. And I said, "I guess I worked this morning." I didn't know. I didn't remember. I didn't remember what had happened a half an hour before. I took care of my children. I washed their face and I fixed their food. But I couldn't comfort them. When they got hurt, I couldn't comfort them or love them. I was just totally turned off because I wasn't going to hurt anymore. No more was anybody going to hurt me. They weren't going to get to me. My dad and I had a lot in common. He's dead now, God rest his soul. But he died with loving me and me loving him. So he's all right. And I was so scared. I didn't know which way to turn. And I'd try to tell Terry, and he couldn't understand what was going on. He didn't have any idea what was going on. If he could have, he would have fixed it. But he didn't understand where to start from. You see, I always thought I was honest. But I lied to Terry. From the day we were married, I lied to him and told him everything was wonderful. We did what he wanted to do. We went where he wanted to go. We had friends that he wanted to have. And I never said anything. I always went along with it. And I resented it. Every once in a while, I would break out and have a friend of my own. And I'd bring him home. And he didn't like him. He was obsessed with the program that you couldn't know anybody that was not in the program. They weren't worth knowing. And they very seldom came back a third time because he was just downright hateful and nasty to them. And they didn't do anything. And I was so angry with him. But yet I was saying, "Everything's wonderful. Let go and let God. You go your way, I go my way." And I was so full of hate and resentment. It's like stuffing garbage down your throat. You stuff it down. It's got to come to a stop sometime. Well, it came to a stop. A crisis happened. He couldn't understand it, and I couldn't understand it. But it happened. And thank God it did happen. And so one night, we were going over to pick up my son at football practice, and he goes to the public school and is in CCD, always in the CCD classes during the week, religion classes. And he was at football practice, and he had missed registration, and we were going to pick him up. And Terry said, "Well, why don't we just stop by the rectory and tell the priest that, you know, we want to sign him up." So we did. We went in and sat down, this new little priest. And he was glad we were there, and he told us that his objective for that year in CCD was teaching the children about the new rite of confession, the new rite of reconciliation within the Catholic Church. And I said, "I think that's great." And I have a habit of my mouth going without my brain getting in gear. And I made the mistake of saying I haven't been to confession for almost 2 years now. And he said, "Fine, I'll hear your confession." He said, "I hear confessions on Saturday afternoon." And I said, Oh, yeah, okay. And I kind of hemmed and hawed around about it. And finally he said, "You want to make an appointment?" I said, Oh, it's not that bad. You know, I haven't been that bad that I have to have an appointment to go to confession. That really shook me up. He said, "Well, I'll see you." So the next Saturday came. It was at 3 o'clock, and at 1 o'clock, I started looking at the clock, 2 o'clock, and I knew I wasn't going to go. So I got real busy cleaning. I was right in the middle. I had a room all torn up, and I said, "I can't go." I couldn't go. Next Saturday came, and the same thing. I found something, a reason why I couldn't go. And then he caught me outside of church one day, and he said, "I've been looking for you." I says, "Oh, yeah?" I said, "I've been busy on Saturday afternoons. That's not a very convenient time." He said, "Well, I'll you come on in and see me." I said, "Okay." And I ignored him for a while longer. And then a friend who was an assistant scoutmaster died, and Sean and I went to the funeral, and I was hurting. Oh, I was hurting. I was to the point when someone says someone committed suicide, I can understand. Because we had a friend that had committed suicide about 4 months before, and before he went upstairs and shot himself, he told his wife, he said, "5 minutes. If I could just have 5 minutes of peace. And if I could just have 5 minutes of peace, God," because my mind just whirled and whirled and whirled. And I was totally tuned out from everybody. Terry'd come in, and he would try to tell me a joke and get me to smile. Because I hadn't smiled in a long time. I didn't have anything to smile about. There wasn't anything in this world to smile about. I had 5 beautiful, beautiful children. And I didn't have anything to smile about. And I would go like that. My children would come up to me and want me to love them. And I'd put my arms around them. And that hurt so badly when one would get hurt, and I would want to comfort them. But I couldn't. My heart and my soul wasn't in it. I didn't want to live anymore. I was hurting so badly that I didn't want to live anymore. In this program, you had given me a loving God. And this loving God stayed with me the whole time. Had it not been for this loving God, I wouldn't have made it that long, because I always had somebody, even though nobody else loved me. He was there. I didn't know how loving he was, but he was there. And I could go out and walk and talk to him. I did all the talking, but no listening. Self-centered. Completely withdrawn. And when it got so bad, I had always been taught in my church that it was a sin to commit suicide. It was lack of faith. And I didn't see it that way. This loving God that you had given me, it would be all right, because he knew how bad I hurt. And he loved me, and he didn't want me to hurt that bad. And I was to the end of my rope. I couldn't hurt anymore. And I was totally obsessed with killing myself. I wanted to stop. I wanted to get out. I couldn't take it anymore. So the day of this funeral, I went to communion, and this little priest was giving out communion, and I went up to communion, and I asked him if he would be free after the funeral to hear my confession, and he said, sure. So Sean went head back to school with some of his friends, and I went to confession. And this is when my recovery began. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know how to say it. And somehow or another, suicide got mentioned. And I told him I knew how a person could commit suicide. And I just broke down and I cried and I cried and I cried and I sobbed. And he held me and he loved me. Put his arms around me and patted me and loved me. And God, it had been so long since I had had somebody love me. Terry could put his arms around me, and he tried to comfort me, but I couldn't be comforted by him. And this hurt him terribly, because he wanted to. So I went over, we went over to the rectory and began to talk, and I told him about some of the things that had been going on. I couldn't even put things in words anymore. I couldn't get my thoughts together enough to put them into words. And I said, I know I need something, but I don't know what I need. He talked a while longer, and finally he said, I think you need some counseling. And I said, well, can you do it, or should I go someplace else? He said, I think you should have some professional counseling. So I went to the mental health center and talked to a man that I thought sure would understand, but he fooled me. He didn't understand. But anyway, he gave me a counselor, and they gave me an appointment for 10 days away. My Lord, 10 days away was a million, million, million years away. And I couldn't go that long because I could barely get through one day. At this time, he wanted to give me pills, and I wouldn't take pills because I was afraid of pills. Because I knew in my heart, if I had those pills there, I'd take every blessed one of them just for that 5 minutes of peace. So I wouldn't take them. But what I was doing, I had read someplace that 2 aspirins are good for pain and 3 is a mild tranquilizer. So 10 ought to do it. And so I get a big handful of aspirin and take them. And 4 or 5 hours later, I get another big handful of aspirin and take them. Consequently, today I have a little problem with my stomach. Get a little pains here and there once in a while. But that gave me a little bit of relief. It didn't solve my problems, but it let me just not think as much. Just in a blur where I didn't have to think. And I called this little priest back and I told him, I said, I can't go that long. And he said, well, come back in tomorrow and see me. And I went back in and saw him 3 times before that 10 days was up. He said, come back in anytime you need to. And God love him. He had a busy schedule and he made time for me. I resented the mental health people because you people had given me instant love. You don't say wait 10 days and come back. When you need, you get right then. But you see, I was resentful toward Al-Anon. Al-Anon is what messed me up. I had practiced this program to the best of my ability, and you had messed me up.
You had lied to me. You said it was going to be great. It was going to be beautiful. You lied to me because here I was and I had tried. And you lied. And I didn't believe you and I didn't trust you anymore. I hated you for lying to me. Sick, confused. So I stayed away from Al-Anon because every time I went, I felt worse and worse and worse. So I started going to counseling, and after a few sessions, this little gal said, "Well, you know, if you don't like it at home, you're nice looking and you're young. You could always get another husband." And I thought, "You stupid, stupid fool." You see, about 3 months before, I had to get away. I had to do some thinking. All the time I hated Al-Anon, it was in here, and I was still using it. You said, make a decision if you're going to live with him or not, or live with him. And so about a week and a half before Mother's Day, I called my husband at the office and I said, "Hey, I know what I want for Mother's Day. I'm going to fly down Florida and see my mother for Mother's Day and give her me for 10 days. And he said, "Good, good." God love him, he went along with so much. Didn't understand. He went along. He loved me even when I couldn't receive the love. He loved me. So I went to Florida and I was god-awful miserable because my mother was so tickled that I would come and spend some time with her, and she entertained me. She took me here and she took me there, and she apologized because she had to work on the desk a couple of days. And she lives in a senior citizen high rise and works 4 days, 6 to 12, 12 to 6, you know, for 24 hours. And then she's off for a couple of days. And with short notice of me coming, she couldn't rearrange her schedule. And she'd say, "Oh, I'm so sorry, but I have to go to work." She'd close that door and I'd say, "Oh, God, thank you." I wanted to be alone down there. I didn't want to see her. And I felt badly. Because I didn't want to see her. I wanted to be alone and think. Because I knew that I was at a point where I had to make a decision what I was going to do. And I came home and I had made my decision that I was staying there. That some way or another, I had given up. I thought on changing Terry. That somehow or another, I wanted a marriage, and I was going to find a way to have a marriage. And she, this little gal, told me, "If you don't like it, get out. You can find another husband." I thought, "You stupid fool. You don't have anything. You're trying to counsel people, and you don't have anything, and you know who I was saying has it." But I wasn't going back. Ho, ho, ho. I wasn't going back. To the people in the program, I wouldn't go back. Pride. So I continued to counsel with this little priest. And I used to feel sorry for him because all I could do was cry. And I would feel like such a fool. I didn't want to cry. And I'd say, "Damn it, I am not going to cry." And I'd grit my teeth and I'd clench my fists and I'm not going to cry anymore. And he'd say, "Oh, hell," and stick the Kleenex box out. And I'd cry. And I'd cry. He'd say, "Cry. It's good for you." It was humiliating to me to cry. To cry meant you were weak. You see what a distorted mind I had? I wanted to kill myself, but to cry in front of someone was weak. I was very mixed up and confused. And this little priest loved me.
And every time we would have a session, when it was over, he would take me in his arms and he would love me. I'd cry some more. And he'd just hug me and pat me on the back and love me and say, "You're going to get better. You're going to get better." And another thing that I couldn't go with the counselor. I couldn't get away from this program if I wanted to, because I knew that not only was I emotionally disturbed, I was spiritually disturbed. And I had to have something for that. I needed emotional counseling and I needed spiritual counseling. And they go hand in hand. And this little priest hadn't been there very long, and he didn't want to be stationed where he was, and he was kind of unhappy about it. And he said, "I guess God wants me here." And thank God he listened, because that's what I needed, him. I am egotistical enough to believe that he was sent for me, and I still believe it. Whether it's egotistical or not, I believe it. Things began to get a little bit better. I told Ken last night that my life seemed like a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle with all the pieces turned upside down. And I had no way of putting it back together. There was no way for doing it. And you know, he said the sweetest, most beautiful, simple thing. And I had never thought about it in all of this time. He said, "You know, the way to work it is to pick up one piece at a time and turn it over." And I'd never thought about it that way. But that's what I did do in essence. You see, I still have a lot of questions to be answered, a lot of things about me that I don't quite understand. But I am getting better. And I kept telling this little priest about Al-Anon. He said, "Why don't you go back?" And I said, "Are you kidding? Not on your life. I'm not going back there." But every time he'd say something to me, I put it in AA and Al-Anon language. That's live and let live. That's let go and let God. That's easy, does it? He has learned more about AA and Al-Anon from me. He has the 12 steps and the traditions. And one day, about 8 months ago, I had kind of a hard way to go. And I was really getting gut level honest. And when we got done, he said, "You know, you've just taken your fifth step." This program works. I didn't know why I was asked to come here today. When Sue called, God love her, and she invited Sean, I thought that was fine. I thought that was wonderful. Because he is a very beautiful, loving person and has a lot to give. A little bit to get to. Don't want to get his ego up there too far. Sorry about that. And then, oh God, she said, "We'd like you to come too." And I haven't completely dropped out. All along, I didn't completely drop out in body. I just dropped out in spirit. I was down to where maybe I'd only go to one meeting a month, but I hadn't totally lost contact, and we still had a lot of AA and Al-Anon people, and the little gals that I sponsored in the program that I gave them a hard way to go, they were always calling me and saying, "Hey, how are you? Just thinking about you." And I didn't want it. I rejected it, but yet there was something in me that was glad it was there. Gave me a little bit of hope for that day. And I told this priest, "No, I'm not going back to Al-Anon. They lied to me. I'm not going back." Even though I was beginning to see that I had lied to myself, I wasn't going back. Pride. Pride. Don't want to admit you're wrong. Don't want people to know what's been going on in my life. Because then I wouldn't be perfect. I wouldn't be that image that they saw me as. And God love it. They put me there and I enjoyed it. And I let them keep me there too. I wanted to become involved. I had started scripture classes, learning more about my religion. My spiritual awareness had grown tremendously because in this time I had a couple of spiritual experiences that I knew how powerful God's love was. I asked finally to have something removed, and it was gone. And I wasn't kidding myself. It was gone. The hate, the hurt was gone. And I knew how powerful he was. And one night, he told me, it'll be all right. It'll be all right. And as the water washed gently over the rock, I felt peace come upon me that I had never known before. And I knew that it would be all right because he said so. But I kept saying, how's it going to be all right? How's it going to be all right? You know, even with this beautiful experience happening to me, I was saying, how's it going to be all right? But that was all right with him, too. And I went back to my bed, and it was all right. The peace was there, and it was all right. So I knew what a powerful God I had, the God that you had given me in this program. You built me up for this, and I kept saying, why does this have to happen to me? Why did it happen to me? Well, the counselor told me, she says, you know, in Al-Anon, you worked from the outside in. You put a beautiful layer of frosting over this cake. Looked gorgeous. But it was kind of like a cardboard cake. You can't eat it. There's nothing to it. It's empty inside. The only thing in there is a lot of moldy, cruddy, old crumbs. And she said, now you have to start working from the inside out. You see, when I first came in this program, I don't think in God's love and in his wisdom, I could have taken this inside out. I had to work on this outside in. And then he said, hey, Cookie, I got something else in store for you. And it began to happen. And I was saying, why? I know now why it had to happen. So I could work from the inside out. So I could really know this God of my understanding, have a conscious contact with him. I think it's a 10th step, 11th step. I don't worry about which step it is anymore. Having had continue to have a conscious contact with him, praying only for his will for me and the power to carry that out. One of my friends, NAA, said, she started saying, hey God, today's your day. And she said, it's just fantastic what happens. Always something terrific happens. It might be a little thing, but it's a spiritual experience. Or it might be a big thing. And some days there's a whole lot of things, a whole chain of things that happen. And she said, God, I don't know if I can take all of this. You know, it's terrific. And I thought, sounds pretty good to me. I think I'll try that. And I've been doing that for the last 3 months. And every day something beautiful has happened. And when I was asked to talk,
I wanted to say no, I wanted to say no, I wanted to say no. And he wouldn't let me say no. He said, I want you there. I know why he wanted me here. You answered questions for me this weekend that I've been asking for almost 2 years. And I couldn't figure out the reason why. I couldn't figure out the answer for it. And you answered them for me. One of them was in the workshop yesterday afternoon on fear. I could never take a positive inventory in this program, and I couldn't understand why. It took me until the last year and a half before I could take that positive inventory. Fear. If I said I was good, I'd have to back it up. And I knew I was no good and couldn't back it up. That's why I couldn't take that positive inventory, because I was so sure that I was so rotten. Nobody else knew it except God, and he was the worst person on earth to know it, person. And I didn't know why this thing happened until Ramona talked last night, and pieces started falling into place that he let this happen so something better could happen to me. And I know that sounds simple, but the realization really hit me is that why it did happen, this loving God of my understanding. And I thought he was punishing me, maybe. Or he just, I didn't know why. I didn't know why. But it was happening to me, and I couldn't cope with it. I wanted to become involved in other things through this counseling. I got involved in this scripture class, and I enjoyed that tremendously. And in another class, and enjoyed that tremendously. And I learned the power of the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, how he works through us. And it was fantastic, the things that could happen. And I wanted to become involved in the charismatic movement. And this little priest said, I think that's great. That's great. And every time I have made plans to go to a charismatic movement, something has always happened to prevent me from going. And I said, this is good. I want to go. And he kept putting me back here. He wouldn't let me come anyplace else. He kept putting me back here, whether I wanted to be or not. I talked to someone that was hurting on the phone and talk about this God of my understanding and this love he has for me, he has for you, for everyone. And they always were the chairman of some group. And they'd say, oh, won't you please come and talk to our group? And I thought, oh, hell. Why couldn't I ever talk to anybody that wasn't chairman of a group? Because they always want me to come and talk. And I couldn't let them know that I couldn't handle that. So I'd go and I'd talk. See, he put me where he wanted me. He made me stay in the program. He gave me people that loved me, whether I was in the program, using the program, working the program or not. And I tried real hard. And coming down here, it was another instance of he wants me in this program. And you know, since I have been in counseling, I know God has a very special purpose for me. And I don't know what it is. He has something very, very, very special for me to do. And I kept saying, where is it? Where is it? I still don't have the full realization of it. But it must be in this program someplace, because that's where he keeps putting me. Thank you for asking me, for allowing me to grow, for making me to grow,
for all of the love that you've given me, the acceptance that you have given me. And I felt like such a phony coming. I thought, poor Sue got a pig in a poke. She picked me on the strength of Sean's talk, and she doesn't even know that I said to hell with Al-Anon. She doesn't know. But I'm here. You have given to me. I hope in some way God has let me be a channel of his love and his goodness to you. But I have already gotten what I needed this weekend. You gave me answers. I love you.